Welcome to the Christian Woman Leadership Podcast, where we hope to inspire you to embrace your God-given gifts, skills, and passions in order to lead with confidence. We want you to remember that you are fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God, and you are fully loved by Him.
You have been designed on purpose by God with unique gifts and passions in order to love and lead those around you. I'm your host, Esther Littlefield, a pastor's wife, business owner, mom, and writer.
And I'm Esther's co-host, Holly Kane. I'm a wife, mom, and business owner. I also write at hollykane.org, where I focus on my passion for women's ministry.
Together, we chat about important issues that Christian women leaders face. In addition, we interview other women just like you who lead in various roles, from church to community to business. Through this podcast, we offer you encouragement, tools, and resources to help you on your leadership journey. We are so glad you're here with us. Hey, friend, welcome to episode 157 of the Christian Woman Leadership Podcast. I'm your host, Esther Littlefield, and I am so glad that you are here with me today. You are in for a treat as we are sharing our conversation with our guest, Heather Creekmore, and I promise you're going to laugh today. So over the past few weeks, we have been hitting on some topics around our thoughts and our mindset. And today you're going to get some real talk about the issue of comparison. Heather shares her story of struggling with body image issues for much of her life and how God finally revealed to her the true cause of this issue. We also dive into what modern day idolatry looks like and how we so often miss it. And Heather shares what we need to do about this problem. We discuss how we can break free from the traps of approval and expectations from others so that we can truly live out our calling in leadership. And we cover so much more. So I know you're going to love this conversation. And again, get ready to laugh because Heather was cracking us up throughout our conversation. Now, if you want the show notes for this episode, you can go to my website, estherlittlefield.com, and then just do /episode 157. The other option that you have anytime you are looking for a previous episode or show notes for any of our guests that we've had is I have a search icon on my website, and you can click on that and you can type in, you know, even if you just remember the first name of the guest or anything that a topic that you are trying to find, type that in and you should see the options that pop up on the website. So I just wanted to make sure you know that that resource is there for you if you're ever looking for past show notes from our podcast. All right, friend, if you find this podcast helpful today and you get value out of hearing Heather's story, would you share it with a friend? Just take a minute and pop onto social media and share a screenshot or share the link to the show or just send it in a text. We are coming up on our 3-year anniversary next month, and we would love to continue to spread the word about this show so that more women can truly be transformed and live out their calling as women in leadership. So thank you again for being here. Let's go ahead and jump into our conversation with Heather. Well, welcome, Heather, to the podcast. We are really excited to be talking with you today. So thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's so fun to be with you.
Awesome. To kick us off, could you tell us a little bit about what your life and leadership looks like right now?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Well, my life is a little crazy. We have 4 children and we have homeschooled for 8 years now. My kids are between the ages of 9 and 14. And so we're a homeschooling family. My husband's a pastor, so I'm a pastor's wife, which always adds interesting elements of leadership and responsibility there. And I am an author and a speaker and a podcaster and, you know, all of that mix of things. And so I call those my hobbies, but those keep me busy as well. But mostly I speak to women, try to encourage women on the topics of body image and comparison. And that's really the journey that God has given me a leadership position in somehow strangely. I like to say this is the topic that I never expected to or wanted to talk about. Like if I could pick what I was going to be talking to women about, it would not be this. but this is the path he has taken me down. And it's been a really humbling and educational experience. Let me put it that way.
It's so fun to hear you say that because I think so often we have some leaders who feel that exact same way. Like, this is not what I would have picked. Right. This is not what I would have chosen. I'm not sure why I was chosen to do this, but here I am. Let's go for it. So I think Absolutely. We have a lot of people that can relate to that. Yeah. So I would love if you could tell us a little bit about your leadership journey, maybe when you realized that you were a leader and kind of how that has evolved through your life.
Yeah. So I have what I'm actually digging into now for my next book is I have a story of what I would call self-transformation. And I'm actually kind of digging into the what was really going on there. But I was the shy girl in sixth grade who did not speak loudly enough for my teacher to hear me. My parents were called into parent-teacher conferences because I did not speak audibly, okay? Now, anyone who knows me now would be like, really? She's so loud. but that was my story. And so in seventh grade, I switched schools and decided I wasn't going to be that girl anymore. And so very quickly, I started being afforded more leadership opportunities. And so through high school, I was going to the leadership camp, you know, getting the opportunity to, I went to Hobie and the Hugh O'Brien leadership camp and, you know, Christian school leadership camps and all the things. And then when I got to college, I realized that I enjoyed leading. Like it was fun for me to lead things. Now, I'll be honest with you, if you want to get real deep, I also recognized that I was more comfortable in a leadership position than I was just being a participant. Like there was an awkwardness to just being one of the people in the group. And so I felt this natural, like, okay, I'll be safe if I can be in charge. And to what degree that's healthy or not, that would be a whole episode, I think. But that was kind of the trajectory I started on. So through college, I was leading things. Then I worked in politics and I managed a couple congressional campaigns. And so had a different kind of leadership role there, obviously more of a management role. But I do believe that my different positions in management kind of helped and influenced other leadership opportunities that I've been given through my 20s and then into my 30s. Oh, goodness, you know, there's a committee. Okay, Heather will be in charge of it. That was kind of my default. And then I married a pastor. And I don't know if you're familiar with this or not, but the way it works when you're a pastor's wife, especially in a small church, is if no one else will be in charge, Heather will. So that's kind of been my leadership journey over the past several decades.
Mm. Yes, I can relate. My husband is a pastor too, although not a lead pastor, but I definitely understand that dynamic of, oh, look, there's somebody who's capable and, oh, her husband is the pastor, so she probably should do it.
Right, so. Right. Oh, I love it. Yep.
So, Heather, I would love to know if there are any leadership lessons. I mean, I'm sure there's hundreds, but any that stand out to you just from some of those things that you just shared. And it even could be related to, you know, your running your ministry and your podcasting and writing journey as well. But anything that stands out to you that you've learned in terms of leadership along the way.
Absolutely. Well, this may sound horrible to confess this, but I'll tell you, even with what I do now, I think I considered this an opportunity just to like get my words out into the world and not necessarily lead people. I kind of didn't see it as a leadership opportunity, if I'm honest. I just wanted to write a book. I just wanted to go talk. And in some ways, that felt safer than actually leading people, right? Because there was this disconnect. I'm just showing up here for 1 hour, then I'm out. Or read my book. But, you know, hey, there's some space between us. But what has God has shown me just recently, and really he's shown me this through my 20s and my 30s, but leadership is all about the people you're leading. Right? Being a shepherd is knowing your sheep, you know, and the good shepherd obviously gives us the greatest example of that. But through the last couple of years, my ministry has kind of taken a sharp turn that I never expected it to take in that I'm coaching now. And so I have the opportunity every week to talk to women, to lead women on this journey that I've taken myself. And there's a very real part of it that is intimidating, right? Because now it's real people. Now, like, oh, what I say to you is going to have consequences for your life. But I think that that's the lesson that, you know, we all need to remember, right? Leadership is about who you're leading, how you're leading them, and really considering them in the process is so much more important than, you know, well, I know all these leadership principles and I know, you know, the good leader is like this. Like, well, no, you have to lead based on who you are, who's following you.
I've never heard anyone say it that way, that they had that disconnect between, I just want to get my message out there, but I don't really want to lead you. And so I can relate to that. I can see why you would feel that way. But, you know, having that sort of real connection with people, I think, is true influence. And so, yeah, I love what you're saying there. So oftentimes when we have a message that we feel that we need to share, it comes out of a personal journey that we've had. So I would love for you to, if you're comfortable sharing with us, what your journey has been with comparison, and maybe what was that moment that you knew something needed to change?
Sure. So my story starts in the third grade. I vividly remember looking in the mirror and thinking that my legs are bigger than the legs of other girls my age. And so really my journey with comparison, my battle with comparison started with a battle with my body image. I was dieting by middle school, trying not to eat by high school, in full-blown eating disorder mode by college, although I didn't have a diagnosis of that because this was the early 90s. And I wasn't anorexic or bulimic. And so I believed I was just a normal girl struggling with the same things that normal girls struggle with, which is being obsessed over my appearance, how I looked, how much I weighed, what I needed to do to change all those things to meet a cultural standard of beauty. Now, preface this with the fact that I was raised in the church. I went to Christian school, like I said, Christian college, Christian graduate school. I knew I was fearfully and wonderfully made. I knew I was God's masterpiece. I knew that God looked on the heart, like it tells us in 1 Samuel. There was not a verse about my body image that I did not have memorized. And yet, nothing seemed to get through. There was this, again, a disconnect between what I knew to be true of Scripture and what I felt about myself. And I didn't know how to reconcile the two. And so that moment that you asked for did happen for me in regards to my body image. And I was in my mid-30s. So consider my struggle probably started around age 9. So we're talking a decades-long struggle. I had had my fourth child. I had 4 years and no twins. And so do the math on that. It's very confusing. But my husband was preparing for ministry and he was listening to Tim Keller. And this was before we had, you know, AirPods. And so for him to listen and be able to do things around the house, he had to kind of blare it through the house. So Tim Keller is blaring through my house, which used to annoy me sometimes, quite candidly. But I'm like, okay, whatever. He's listening to this. I don't know who this guy is, but I'm sure it's fine. And I'm cleaning my kitchen and I start to hear Tim Keller talk about modern day idolatry. And I was stunned. And right then and there, the Holy Spirit really spoke to me, not audibly, of course, but like just in my spirit. It was like, this is your problem with your body. And I was stopped in my tracks, like, whoa, wait a second here. Idolatry? Like, we don't have any statues. No one's making a bronze image of me. Like, how could this be? And so I went all in on studying modern day idolatry. And in the course of that, really was awakened to the fact that I had this issue. It was really a sin issue that I didn't even know I had and had struggled with for decades, right? And then that was really the turning point for me to find tremendous freedom in my body image issues, but then also to see how really all the areas of my life that I was stuck in comparison were really had at some level this root of idolatry. There was this belief that if I could just have that thing, if I could just do this, if my life could be like this, then I would be free. Then I would be able to rest. Then I would have joy. Then I would have peace. So really the body image journey kind of connected me to a journey of really figuring out what was going on with my just compulsive comparison and then how to get out of that.
I think so many people can relate to that because I think that we all kind of go through some sort of comparison. I mean, I don't want to say that it's I feel like it is part of, you know, the sin nature that we have, part of that nature. And so it's such a rampant issue. I want to talk about this and get into a little bit deeper, but I did just want to say, like, you mentioned that you were a contestant on the show Nailed It on Netflix. And honestly, like, I cannot think of a better show to talk about comparison, right?
Right.
Because you have this ideal standard of something, mm-hmm. no matter how trivial it may seem, this cake or, you know, this really cool treat or whatever. And it's just this hilarious show about how, you know, regular people just have to go and create these things. And so I find that such a unique parallel. And so I would love for you to kind of chat about that experience and how it plays into your message. And then we're going to kind of dig deep into comparison and all the different parts about what you talk about in your book.
Well, so Nailed It, I have to say, was probably one of the most fun experiences of my entire life. And I'll preface that with, it was a good reminder for me that we have a God who knows us and loves us at an intricate level, right? Because I'm the girl who loves cooking shows. I love those shows. Love me some Food Network. And would have, like, lifelong dream was to be a broadcaster. So being on one of those shows, couldn't think of anything more awesome. But if you saw my episode, season one, episode one, you may have figured out that that is not exactly something I'm good at. So the odds of me getting on one of those shows was about the same as the odds of me, like, getting to play in the Super Bowl for, for my favorite football team. Like, just was not going to happen. So the fact that our God could find the perfect cooking show for me just stuns me to this day. But yes, that experience was an amazing testimony, really, of my growth in this area. I mean, I've always been able to laugh at myself. Like, I've never had a hard time with, like, kind of the self-deprecating humor or the, oh, shucks, I made another mistake. Like, that's not really been an area that I was stuck. But honestly, in my heart, like, there's been this serious drive for perfection, right? And so my hand was in the Netflix, the little thumbnail for the show. My hand was in that thumbnail holding up my blue cake for probably the first year that the show was out. And my fingers are not manicured. Okay. So the Heather 5 years ago would never have gone, like, I probably wouldn't even gone to church without my nails being done. But I was on national television without my nails done. And every time I see that thumbnail, I'm like, oh, there's that unmanicured hand right there. But so there was a testimony on that front, just the work that God had done in my body image and me being free to just kind of be more of who I was and not feel like I had to be all done up and have this certain look and certain image to be on television. But then beyond that, Holly, and you captured it. I was going to say you nailed it, but you captured it perfectly. If I look at that side-by-side picture of my blue, like, Leaning Tower of Pisa cake compared to that perfect wedding cake by Sylvia Weinstock, like, that is the image of what I felt like most of my life. I have felt like I was the cake on the left, like, dripping icing, messy, like, trying to be put together, trying to be attractive, trying to look edible. But yet, I'm just a mess. And then there was the ideal me on the right side, right? All perfect. And the truth is, now, Sylvia Weinstock told us off camera that it took a team of 20 women 2 weeks to make that cake that we were supposed to make in 2 hours. So, you know, we can have all this, like, knowledge of reality and yet still feel like I should be more perfect. I should be more ideal. I should be more like that. And so, yes, that image does capture perfectly the struggle I had for decades.
Mm-hmm. That's such an amazing story, Heather. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. And I think that visual is really powerful of how so many of us probably feel a lot of our lives. And so in your book, The Burden of Better, you talk about this issue of comparison. I know we're going to kind of dig into some of the things that you share in the book and that you've shared in your ministry as well. But you talk about this issue of comparison, and you mentioned it even in your story earlier, of really it being kind of a sin issue and an idolatry issue. And so here on the podcast, we often talk about personal development. And, you know, I believe as Christians, God wants us to always be growing and changing and becoming more like Christ, right? And so there feels like there's a little bit of a tension with mm-hmm. this issue of comparison and, you know, the need to be better versus actual healthy growth that we should be having as Christians. So could you talk to us about that and figure out how, you know, maybe you can help us understand the difference between the two.
Absolutely. So idols can be good things that we've turned into ultimate things, right? So we could turn our marriage, we could turn our husband, our spouse into an idol. That doesn't mean that having a spouse is bad, that marriage is bad, right? Of course not. Those are things that were ordained and designed by God. But if we turn to our spouse as the one who can fulfill us, save us, make our life all that we ever hoped and dreamed it would be, well, not only is it going to put some pressure on our marriage, I mean, I've tried that. It didn't work out so well. But it turns our spouse, our mate, into an idol, into someone we are looking to for some sort of salvation from the current state we are in. And that's when the line is crossed. And so when it comes to personal development, like I share in my book, I had the commit yourself to constant improvement postcard. I didn't have a computer when I first got the postcard, to be honest with you. It was in college. I went to college with a word processor. Okay, that's how old I am. There were dinosaurs roaming the earth with my word processor. Okay, so, but I had this commit yourself to constant improvement card, and I carry that thing. Like, there's not a lot that I've held on to for decades, but I carry that thing with me. When I started my first job in my 20s, I mean, that thing was probably on my computer until I was 35 years old. And really, you know, Esther, to what you're saying, like, I very seriously took that as, like, this is my charge. I need to be the best I can for Jesus. I need to be better and do all the things and, you know, grow in this way and grow in that way. But what I realized now is that a lot of my motivation for growth and betterment, if you will, was to serve an idol. To serve someone that was not Jesus, really to serve an image of me that I was trying to create, right? Like, I wanted to be better, honestly, so you would kind of think I was awesome, right? I wanted to be better, honestly, so maybe I get a better job, maybe I get a better book deal, you know, all those things, right? And that was not about humble service to King Jesus. That was about prideful service to Queen Me, right? So the line is thin, right? Because idols can be good things. There's nothing, if you're a writer, there's nothing wrong with becoming a better writer, improving your craft, getting better at putting those words on the page. But if that becomes the ultimate thing, if that becomes the thing that defines you, that gives you value, that gives you worth, then maybe it's become an idol. And instead of serving a greater purpose for God's kingdom, you're trying to kind of fit that into serving the purpose of your own agenda, your own motivations. And honestly, those never satisfy us. We always fall short when we try to do that.
Yeah, I think that's a really good line of demarcation to make, that these things are not bad. It's just, how much of our life are they overtaking? How much of ourselves are we giving over to this? Are we giving ourselves over to Jesus, or are we giving over to ourselves over to the pursuit of XYZ, whatever that is? So thanks for clearing that up for us, because I feel like there can be a real tension there in how you kind of move forward in that. So you present the idea in your book of a comparison-free life. And for those of us who feel really mired down by comparison, what does that even look like? Can you even paint that picture for us, how we can figure out what the end goal is and what that even looks like to live day to day?
Sure. Well, you know, the picture I want to paint for you is actually from my first book, Compared to Who, but I feel like it's the best visual. And since I had used it in my first book, I couldn't use it in my second. But really, the visual God gave me for a comparison-free life was, he showed it to me at the airport. So my husband and I were both type A. We were going to a pastor's conference. We lived in Dallas at the time, and we were headed to a pastor's conference in Miami. And we were way early for our flight. And so I'm sitting there just watching people walk through the airport. And what I noticed is people walk through the airport with a sense of determination. They know exactly where they're going. Okay, now granted, like, exclude all the people that are like headed to the bathroom, although they know where they're going, or headed to like the food stand, right? They know where they're going too, right? But for the most part, what you have when you come into an airport is you have a boarding pass. And on that boarding pass, it's been a long time since a lot of us have traveled, right? So this is a reminder here. On that boarding pass, it says gate C-17 or whatever gate you're supposed to go out of, right? And so you walk through that airport making a beeline to your gate, knowing that that gate is the place where you're going to catch that flight. And guess what? That's the only gate they're going to let you go out of. That's the only flight you're going to be able to catch with that boarding pass. And so the visual that God gave me was of us being able to walk through life with that sort of determination, right? Where we're not walking through life like, or walking through the proverbial airport, like, oh, that flight's going to Maui. That would be better than the flight I'm on. Maybe I'll just kind of hang out here for a little and, you know, see if they'll let me on that plane. Or, oh, that flight's going to Minneapolis. Well, it sure is cooler there. You know, maybe I'll, like, no, not being distracted by where they're going and where they're going or where she's going, where she's going, but knowing what is on your boarding pass and having the confidence to pursue that. Now, I understand that sometimes that can sound a little overwhelming, like, oh, I don't know what's on my boarding pass. That's a lot of pressure. Like, what if I don't know what God's called me to do? And this calling thing and purpose thing and all these words, they get so ethereal and oh, like angels have to come down and sing and say, this is your calling. And then you know what's on your boarding pass. Like, I don't mean it to be overcomplicated and stressful in any of those ways, right? I do believe like God takes us by the hand and leads us through the airport, right? To the gate that he has for us. But I do, the picture I want to encourage women to see is that the pressure is off. Like, it's okay for you to have a unique calling and purpose. And the truth is, you may be called to do something that someone else is already doing, but that's okay because God's going to do it through you in a unique way with your unique voice and your unique talents. And I think where comparison muddies us up and really inhibits us as believers and followers of Jesus Christ is that we see people doing something that we think we're also called to do and we stop. And we say, well, it's already being done. I don't need to do that. I mean, as I started to write my book on comparison, no kidding. I was at a place that did not have internet. Okay. Like, we had no signal, just a little bit was like trickling through on my phone. And I sat down to write in this undistracted place. And wouldn't you know it, the only message that got through was about a brand new book on comparison that was coming out. And I had to put everything down and just like walk around that house for 15 minutes. Like, I'm not going to do this. There's already someone writing a book on comparison. And oh, like, why even bother? Why am I even here? You know, and just throw my own little temper tantrum. But, you know, the reality that the Holy Spirit gently brought me back to was no, like, I'm going to have a different story than she had. I'm going to have a different way of saying things, a different perspective, different life experience. And so to say, just because a good singer is already singing, I shouldn't sing, that would be ridiculous, right? To say, just because a good baker is already baking, I shouldn't bake. Well, maybe I shouldn't bake. So that's not the best example. but we have the freedom to live out our calling the way he's uniquely gifted us to do it. Mm.
I love that so much. And it's something that Holly and I, we talk about this topic, this theme a lot on our podcast. And I think of the phrase, stay in your lane, right? Mm-hmm. Like, stay in your lane, because that's what God has called you to do. But so often we end up turning side to side, looking at what other people are doing in their lanes. And then we're like, oh no, we trip and fall because we're distracted by those things. So I love the visual of the gate in the airport. That's going to definitely stick with me. So Heather, you talk about this idea of if then statements in your book, like if I could just do this thing, then XYZ would happen, or then I would be happy, right? So how can we combat this type of thinking, and what do we replace it with?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, the ultimate understanding, I think, of our if-then statements is to understand that these are just kind of the lures of our idols, right? Our idols say, if you can reach this weight, then you're going to feel great on your vacation. If you can get this number of followers, then you are going to have a thriving career. If you can, you know, get this level of success or get this amount of paycheck or all of these things, right? And these are just the lures of idols. These are what they call out to us, really how they keep us serving them, right? Because these are promises that idols make. make. Jesus does not make us if-then promises, not in the same way, right? He says, my burden is easy. He tells us that he gives us rest, right? And so I think it's just important to every time we start to live in those if-then statements to kind of stop and say, okay, what idol is beckoning me here? Who's saying this? Whose timeline really is this? Like, you know, Jesus allows us to live in the here and now, and idols say life will be better in the future.
So I love the idea that you've kind of rooted this all. These are symptoms, I guess, of these idols that we have. And so I would love it if you could kind of peel back the layer here and go down kind of to the next layer, because you say in your book, comparison is our culture's catch-all term for things God calls sin. Mm-hmm. And this feels like a really hard-hitting statement because I don't know that we actually view it this way. Right. And for you to call it an idol, I'm sure that that feels like stepping on toes for a lot of people. So can you talk about why comparison is sin and maybe how that relates to the idols that you're talking about? And I'll add one more little thing. If you could talk about maybe the most common idols, call those out for our modern day, because I know you said they look different than what they said in the what it looked like in the Bible.
Yes. Saying idolatry, this is sin. Like, you know, no one's like standing and applauding like, yay, sin, woohoo. But I tell you, I am excited about the freedom that comes when you are able to see a root of sin. Because the truth is, so just going back to my body image issues, right? The truth is, I believed for decades that I just had a normal girl problem and that because I was female, I was going to have to carry this baggage around with me because I'm a girl and this is what girls have to struggle. They always have to look better. And this is just part of your duty as a woman, right? And so understanding, oh, no, there is a root of sin here. There's a cure for sin, right? For Psalm 19, if we confess our sins, he's faithful and just to forgive us of our sins and to cleanse us from all unrighteousness, I can be free. So I think finding a root of sin, I mean, not that like we're on a witch hunt in a crazy kind of way, right? But I think that understanding like, oh, wow, my depraved heart found a shiny object to worship other than Jesus. Oh, that's understandable, right? Oh, there's a sin problem here. Like, yeah, I think that's good news. So that's my twisted perspective on it. But I feel like there is freedom when you can call out a sin issue, right? So that's thing one. And then thing two. So yes, comparison is our nice word. And I'm kind of starting to get angry the more I talk about this, because angry in the nicest way. But I feel like, you know, we're not doing anyone any favors if we just keep using this nice word on things that are really issues that the Bible talks about, like covetousness, like envy, like jealousy, like pride, right? And I mean, I have been to women's conferences where I've heard a woman stand on stage and talk about how she secretly hates someone because she has a better metabolism than she does. And I'm like, wait, no. Like, you don't say that to this group of women. That is envy. Right? That's not secret hate. That's not comparison. That's straight up envy. Like, you can't, no, don't teach envy from the stage, right? Or in the body image realm. Ooh, I mean, there are some out there that have made a great splash in Christian culture by encouraging us to be prideful about our bodies and teaching that body pride was actually the avenue to body image freedom. And as I read my Bible, I'm like, I don't think so. I think God opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. Like, I do not think pride is our way out of anything, right? And so, yes, I am pretty daggum serious about us using Bible words for Bible issues. If I am mad that my neighbor's getting a new kitchen and I kind of secretly wish that I had a kitchen like hers, and oh, I hate my kitchen. I'm so upset with my kitchen. And now I'm angry with my husband because we have a yucky kitchen and they have a new kitchen, a newly remodeled kitchen. Like, no, that's a covetousness issue, right? Or sometimes we do it like this. Sometimes it's not that we envy a friend. Sometimes it's that we just like covet her abs after baby, right? Or covet her, everyone wants a butt now, covet her butt or whatever. I hope that was clean. You guys told me to keep it clean.
We're good. We're good.
Okay. But, you know, there's all these different ways that we are using the word comparison for things that we're doing that actually are displeasing to God's heart. And then the third thing I think you asked for, Holly, was the biggest idols. And so our body one is a really big one. I mean, that's the one that I talk to the most clients about, of course. But what I'm finding and what I'm planning on writing about next, we've got a pretty big idol of control as well. And a lot of times that's pretty intricately woven with a body image idol. Sometimes we have idols of success. Right. And that can actually, it's interesting, that can carry into what we do with our bodies too. So sometimes I have women that have this big idol of success, and that's really the idol with a stronghold. And the way it's carrying itself out is that they feel like they need to have a certain look in order to be successful, in addition to, you know, degrees or job titles or all those things. But yeah, I would say control, success, and body are three of the big ones.
Mm. Oh, Heather, I think you may have stepped on a few toes there, but we're all good with that because you know, that's what we do here on this podcast. We don't beat around the bush on the hard issues, but, you know, talking about this as sin, I think is really powerful. And you said earlier, and we all know this, like we know the Bible answer to sin is Jesus, right? It's salvation. It's the grace he gives us. But how, like, so, okay, I confess my comparison. I recognize that I have an idol. I recognize this. I confess it. But then what? Like, how do I actually practically get out of the comparison cycle in my head?
Right. Right. Yeah. Because you don't just flip a switch and you're like, okay, great. Now I'll never compare myself again.
Right.
No, I mean, you know, this is going to be something that's going to tempt us as long as we're on this earth, right? Like that's the way the enemy works. He tempts us. And these idols, they lure us in through their temptation. So I think then after acknowledging that, then it comes to what are you doing practically, right? And so, you know, when I talk to women's groups, I ask this very rhetorical, stupid question, and it gets a little laugh, but I think it's important to just bring it back to basics. Like, if you are looking for a present for your husband for his birthday, are you going to buy him like a subscription to some sort of porn? Well, no, you're not going to do that, right? That's ridiculous because it's neither healthy nor holy for him, right? You wouldn't want to tempt him in that way, right? But also you wouldn't want the effects of what that's going to do to your relationship, what's it going to do to him, all those things, right? So likewise, if you have a struggle with comparison, like, is it healthy and holy for you to spend a lot of time on Instagram? Who are you following, right? I mean, maybe it's not Instagram that's the problem. Maybe it's just who you're following. You can unfollow super easy. But, you know, I give a little litmus test for my clients. It's like, if you're following someone, all of a sudden that your stomach kind of starts to feel uneasy. Boom, that's your signal. That's your body telling you, okay, nope, unfollow this person, right? And, you know, what are you watching, right? I mean, we are, my clients, especially, these are women that have struggled with some level of eating disorder, a lot of them. So they're very careful about what they put in their mouth. But what are you putting in your eyes? Like, what are you consuming with your eyes that is creating all kinds of things in your head that you're going to have to wrestle with, you know, for who knows how long, right? Those images don't go away quickly. So there's lots of practical things after acknowledging the idol that I think we have to do just to kind of keep our freedom, if you will, or really to lead us on a path towards greater freedom.
So one of the things that you talk about is idealism and expectations, and even go as far as to say idealism is one of those idols. So it seems to me that that one is really sneaky, that that we may not even realize that we're trapped in idealism or unrealistic expectations. Because I know a lot of times when I've dealt with disappointment, discouragement, frustration, it often stems back to unrealistic expectations that I had, and I don't even realize it's happening before it happens. So how do we identify that we're trapped there? Can you explain a little bit more about what idealism is and how we kind of work with the Holy Spirit to figure that out?
Absolutely. So this is my new favorite topic. And that chapter is the one that I get asked about every single interview. So I think my next book is just going to be that chapter elaborated. I think that's what I'm supposed to do. But yeah, so the ideal me, right? Like, we all have this. I've not met a woman who does not have the ideal her in the back of her head. Okay. If you are that woman, please reach out to me because I'd love to meet you. But I've not met her. So it's this kind of sneaky, as you said, this list of things that we should have, should be doing, should look like, should have attained, that kind of, I don't know, sits on our shoulders or maybe follows us around like Winnie the Pooh's little dark rain cloud, right? Like it's just there all the time. And then there's all these different ways that we don't measure up to it. I mean, they can be simple. So in my book, I talk about how I was going to be the perfect mom. I don't know if anyone else was going to be the perfect mom, but I was certain I was going to be the perfect mom and there were not going to be chicken nuggets in my house. You know, granola bars, all those high fructose corn syrup, that would not be a terminology that my children were familiar with, right? Like there were all these ways I was going to be this incredible mother. And as I was writing that book, like I have four kids, like I said, and just like over and over again, minute after minute, someone was coming down and getting a bag of chips, coming down and getting a granola bar. And it was like, and every single time I recognized that little feeling in my gut, like I failed. Oh, I'm a horrible mom. Oh, man, I stink. Oh, I should go cut up some vegetables or something. Oh, you know, and realizing that the pressure, the burden that this is on me, that I am, quote unquote, not the kind of mom that I think I should be or that I want to be. And so that kind of led me to dissect this. What is this really? Where did that come from? And many women I would meet would say, oh, Heather, I don't have a comparison problem. I never compare myself to other people, but I'm just trying to be the best me I can be. And then if I would dig deeper with those women, I'd be like, well, who is this best me? Well, she's this and she's this and she's this. And it was like, well, where did that come from? Oh, it just came from me. Probably not. Probably not. Over the years, you have collected ideas about who you think the ideal you is, right? And what that ideal you should look like. And so anyway, all that backstory to take you to where I think we really need to be as we recognize these ideal versions of ourselves that loom over us. I think, and this is, oh, we may be stepping on some toes here. Oh, so prepare your shoes. But I think if we really stop and look at what's happening, and I'll use myself personally as an example, I have the list of things, my personal list of things, things that I have written, the list of Heather. Let me go one step further. I have the Bible of Heather. These are the things that makes Heather worthy. These are the things that makes Heather good. These are what makes Heather approved. These are all the things that Heather should achieve, do, or be like so that Heather is worthy. In whose eyes? In Heather's eyes, right? And I know it's weird to talk about yourself in the third person, but just for sake of illustration, right? It's the God of me. It's the God of self. It's who am I trying to please in all this? I'm trying to please me by becoming the ideal me. And I have to picture Jesus standing off to the side, you know, kind of waving like, hey, over here, already wrote a Bible, already gave you the path to acceptance, already told you you're worthy and loved because of what I did for you on the cross. Oh, Heather, you really don't have to jump through all those hoops and do all that crazy and believe that you need something other than granola bars to make me happy, right? Like it's not that hard and I overcomplicate it. And so that's where I think our ideals get us into trouble. Mm-hmm.
It seems like kind of what you were just sharing about is this idea of identity and where mm-hmm. our true identity lies, not in the idol that we create of ourselves, but actually in who God says we are. Right. So how can knowing our identity help with comparison? And how can we actually truly understand our identity accurately?
Right. Right. I mean, that's a huge question, Esther. I mean,
I know, super easy.
Like, whoa, I think I need a couple letters behind my name, extra ones before I answer that in any kind of way. But I will tell you, just so I have this really difficult to read book that I'm trying to get through right now, written by the dean at Gordon Conwell, but it's about image versus identity and idolatry. So it's a really fascinating look at all those different components. And honestly, how like idolatry is kind of the reverse of the Imago Dei. Like we are made in the image of God, but then as God's creation, we try to make these other images. And then we get in this really distorted relationship with these images we make because we reflect on them, but then they also reflect on us, which is different from our relationship as the creation to the creator, right? Because we don't reflect on God. Like he's the originator, right? And so it's this really complex ball of yarn that I'm still trying to weed through. But I would say the simple, that like, you know, the without a seminary degree answer is, and this is what I write about in Burden of Better, it's just understanding grace, right? If we can just truly understand all the different ways that God's grace is on us, that God's saving grace has saved us not just for the future, but that God's saving grace gives us an identity now, an identity that's secure, an identity that says, no matter how many people don't like me, no matter how many failures I have in leadership, right? No matter how many times I mess up, my identity is secure in him. I have a home and a future and a hope in him that nothing and no one can take away. And so I think that's where I find my rest and peace, quite honestly, is in that fact. And then beyond that, oh my word, just the extra blessing, like the cherries and the chocolate syrup and the sprinkles on top of all that are just the different ways that his grace is manifest in us every day through trying to sanctify us, like we talked about, through growing us, allowing us to use our gifts and really play a role in bringing his kingdom, right? And then through sustaining us when we go through hard times, like we all do, when we go through suffering, his grace is there for every step and every part of our life.
I love that you talked about that because that was my exact next question. You already answered it. I wanted to talk about saving grace, sanctifying grace, and sustaining grace. And you, I think, did it perfectly. So thank you. I think that we hear the word grace often talked about a lot, but I don't know that I've heard it in those three ways. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about this. I'm going off script here, but where did that come from? Like as you were writing the book and you were kind of putting that together, how did you kind of find that idea through Bible reading or through prayer or whatever? Like where did that come from and how has that lived out in your life as you kind of work through those types of graces?
Yeah, well, I'm quick to say that I probably lived the first part of my Christian life as a Pharisee. And by that, I mean I was someone who didn't really understand grace. I have a strong justice personality. And so I like what's fair and what's just, and grace is not that, right? And so I felt very compelled to earn my way and grew up in churches that were perhaps a little bit more legalistic, you know, where I had to be a good girl. And if I was a good girl, then there would be certain outcomes. And that was really what I lived by, more so than living a life of being relaxed in grace. Now, when I say relaxed in grace, I don't mean relaxed in obedience, right? Because I think we obey out of love and we can abuse God's grace. I'm singing that song in my head that's on Christian radio all the time. I don't want to abuse your grace. That's what's going through my head now. But I'm not advocating for that, right? But I think that I didn't have a clear picture of all of the different ways God's grace was in operation in our daily lives. And so, yes, I started studying it. Paul Tripp writes about a couple of these. So I basically just started looking for other authors who had looked at different aspects of grace. And from this realm of authors that I read, kind of narrowed it down to, I think there's four. I don't know. There may be seven. but I felt like there were four categories that I could put everything into. And that was saving grace, sanctifying grace, growing grace, and sustaining grace. And then it was really kind of a fun journey to dig into what do those words actually mean? I mean, I don't think I would have ever told you sanctification was a grace, right? Like sanctification, that's just hard. And that sounds like not a grace, right? But it totally is grace that God cares about us, to care about forming us into being more like Jesus and really putting us on the path so we can be refined, right? And it's so interesting because that path is in some ways so similar to this path that we naturally put ourselves on with self-improvement and yet so different, right? because Jesus has a much different way of accomplishing things than we would choose most of the time, right? And it's for a different purpose than the self-improvement track.
Mm, that's such a good point. Yeah, I'm thinking of that. God doesn't usually give us like a 90-day plan for, right, you know, how we're going to be better 90 days from now. Right. But that's how we try to do it for ourselves. Oh, so good. So Heather, I want to ask you kind of a follow-up question to some of the things you've just been sharing, because I kind of am seeing this idea that, you know, okay, if I'm struggling with comparison, I can confess it. I can accept God's grace. I can, you know, I understand my identity, do some of these practical things that you shared with. But one of the things that a lot of our listeners experience as leaders is that it's not necessarily, I mean, it definitely is their own personal comparison, but often there's comparison coming from the outside, right? You know, as a pastor's wife, right? So maybe you come into a church and there was a different pastor's wife before, and now you're there and you're going to be compared to what she did and what you're not doing. Or you get a new job and now you're being compared to what the person before you did or what the person ahead of you does. And you may not be living up to the standard that other people have for you, even if you've gotten freedom in your own life.
Right.
So how do we deal with that?
Yeah. So I would say really what you're asking is, what do we do with wanting other people to approve of us? Right?
Yeah.
Because when someone's comparing us to someone else and saying we fall short, then really we internalize that as, you don't approve. I'm not good enough for you. You want me to be different. You want me to match a certain type. You want me to be the pastor's wife. You'll appreciate this, Esther. The pastor's wife that plays the piano and sings special music at offering. I know our church doesn't have that anymore, but I grew up with that, right? That's what the pastor's wife did. And I was like, oh Lord, if I'm going to be pastor's wife, that's not going to happen here. But yeah, what do we do with the expectations people have on us? And I'll tell you honestly, like, that has been a struggle for me, because I, just with the ball of issues that I've described to you through this episode, like, that's just part of it. Approval is a big part of this. I manage my image because I want you to approve of me. I want you to like me. That's my reward here on this earth, is you smiling and nodding and saying, oh, you're so great, right? And so when that doesn't come, woo, what happens for most of us is, instead of being like, nah, it's okay, it's like, okay, I've got to work harder. I've got to be better. I've got to, you know, I've got to prove to you that I am, you know, who you want me to be, or that I am better than who you want me to be, right? And then it becomes this additional burden of, okay, now I've got to be this thing for this person. And I'll tell you, the most freeing statement I've ever heard on this, I wrote in my book, it's from my pastor's wife, because my husband's an associate pastor right now. And so we have a lead pastor. And she shared a story about coming out of a hard time with a church, a young church that they had planted. And it was very much part of my story as well. We had a really hard time with the church that we had planted, and these very same issues, disapproval issues, women that did not like the way I was doing things. And so this is personal. This is real for me. And my pastor's wife, Cindy, said, as she was struggling with this, she was praying and she was like, God, if they just knew my heart, then they'd like me. You know, if, just show them my heart. And she very, very, in a very real sense, felt like God was saying, oh, Cindy, if they knew your heart, they'd have a whole lot more reasons not to like you. And that, y'all, just like, just slapped me across the face and was like, oh, yes, I have no control over what other people think of me. And quite frankly, the harder I try to manage it, the more frustrating it becomes, because you can do everything to protect your reputation. You can do everything to try to be a great leader, a kind, caring, compassionate leader, one who's always looking out for the people, one who's, you know, being led by the Lord and going in the direction that you feel like God has asked you to go. And you can still have a follower that doesn't think you're doing it well enough, or thinks you're getting it wrong, or just doesn't like you. And you may never win them over. And so I think that's when it comes down to, who's your audience of one? You know, ooh, how do you just pray hard, ask Jesus to put that Teflon around your heart when their darts come so they bounce off, right? But just really resting and trusting in his grace, and knowing that your identity is not found in everyone loving you, but your identity is found in the fact that you have a future hope. That no matter what this person says about you or does to you, you have a future hope and glory, and nothing can separate you from the love of Christ.
Oh, taking us to church. I felt like I could say amen like over and over and over again. But I do truly feel like, for our listeners, they're putting themselves out there. They're they're delivering a message to the world that people may not always like. I mean, I'm sure that you get a lot of people who don't like the fact that you're calling these things out as idols. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not really a comfortable place for people. And so, you know, I do think that just remembering who we're doing this for, remembering, you know, that audience of one, but also the lives that are changed for the better when we do walk in our calling and walk in the message that God has given us. And, you know, we had someone that we talked to earlier today on another interview who said, it's not about me, it's about the message. And so when we can remember that and can kind of walk in that, I think that's so powerful. But it's something to be very frank about, that it hurts. It doesn't feel good. And to act like it's okay, I think is part of the problem too. So yeah, I just love the fact that you talked about it so bluntly, frankly, I guess is really important.
Well, because I think, you know, as you said that, Holly, I was thinking, like, I think our natural response when that hurt comes is pride, right? Well, you don't know anything about leadership. Oh, well, you don't know the whole scenario. Or, well, you're stupider. Like, you're dumber than I am. Or, like, if you had gone to the school I went to, like, we come up with this, like, list of ways to justify ourselves. And then we, like, create this competition. It's her v. me. And, okay, my list has me coming out better. So I can just rest confidently in the fact that I'm better than her anyway. And that is not what God asks of us. So, I mean, it does hurt. And it really hurts to sit in it without doing that. Yeah. Right? But, you know, to something you said just a moment ago, you know, you're right. Our success, if you will, cannot be measured in the stories we get from people or the amount of pleasure people express to us about how they've enjoyed our message, that kind of thing. I mean, there are years where you don't get any of that feedback. We planted a church, like I mentioned, and there were probably the first 5 years where we constantly questioned whether or not we were doing anything valuable for the kingdom at all. It was just all hard and no positive feedback. I mean, very little, let's put it that way. And so just to encourage anyone listening today where you're like, oh, that positive feedback thing she mentioned, that'd be nice. No, it may be that you're in a season where that has not come. And that doesn't necessarily mean you're doing it wrong or not following what God has asked you to do. It's just there are seasons we have to endure just like that.
Oh, I just love this conversation. I'm so excited for people to hear it. So one of the things I know, if you've been in church circles, you've probably heard this devotional or this message on contentment. And for me, like, I hate those. I just want to run screaming. It feels like a dirty word. It feels like something that is so out of reach. And honestly, when I've heard it, the practical things that I've heard people say, really what it comes down to is this sort of grin and bear it kind of, I'm going to be content today. I'm going to be, and that doesn't work. And so I know you talk a lot about gratitude and all those types of things. I'm wondering how you encourage women to realize contentment in their lives without the sort of white knuckle approach to it, because that does not work.
I love that you said that. We intentionally left the word contentment off of the cover because we feel like it is, my editor and I agreed, it was like, that's just a dirty word. And I was single through my 20s, and those sermons at Singles Ministry about contentment, and if you're just content, then your husband will magically appear. I mean, I tried it and he didn't show up that way. So I feel you on that one, those are awful. And really, I think that there's an amount of shame that comes with that, right? Like, you're just not content enough. And that's why you're not getting everything you want. You're just, you selfish little brat. You just need to be more content, right? And I don't think that's true. I don't think that's true, especially like for me. I was like, no, Lord, I'm just seeking a mate. I'm not trying to be discontent. So how do we find contentment? Again, how much time you have? So in the book, I talk about gratitude, and I bristle at the thought of contentment being a formula, because it's not. It's not formulaic. There's not like here's the three ways to be content. And I think anyone who tries to present it to you that way probably hasn't actually experienced it yet. So, but gratitude is really important. But let me kind of clarify that, because gratitude is something everyone's talking about, right? Like, this isn't new. Like, oh, gratitude, I never thought about that. No, everyone's talking about that. We've been talking about that since Anne Voskamp's book, right? Like, this is not fresh meat here. But here's where I want to emphasize something that I think we miss, right? We can cannot just be grateful in the way that the world is grateful and expect it to lead to godly contentment, right? Like, I can't just keep like lists of like, oh, I'm thankful that it's raining today, or I'm grateful that I have a family. Like, we can do those things. They're nice. They're helpful. It's good to acknowledge those. But I think our biggest area of gratitude has to come back to the gospel. And then I'm grateful for what God has done in my life. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to see every aspect of my life through the lens of grace, right? So I think that that is the daily exercise, the daily discipline, if you will, that will lead us to a path towards contentment faster than just writing five things I'm happy about in my life every day, right? It's really about the gospel. And to leave the gospel out of our gratitude practice is to miss the whole point.
Mm. Powerful, powerful reminder. Oh, so I want to wrap us up. I mean, I don't want to wrap us up, but we probably should, right? Like you said, how long do we have? But kind of this last topic, which I think is relevant to what you've just been sharing in the regards to the fact that you're a pastor's wife, and we're talking about stuff in the church and in the church culture. But it seems like sometimes our church culture is actually a breeding ground for comparison. So how can we change our culture to actually encourage people that are confident, who know their identity, and who are walking in the calling that God has given them?
Woo, that's a big one, Esther.
Holy cow. Just another 2 hours or
how
so.
How can we change the church? Oh, sure. Well, let me just rattle off my answer for you. No, so I think the first thing that comes to my mind is really something I wrote about in the introduction of my book, because it was me at church singing the song, God, You're So Good, while comparing myself with the woman on stage trying to figure out if she was skinnier than I was and all the ways she was better than me. That really kind of jolted me into asking some of the questions that I pose in my book, where it's like, okay, do I really believe that God is good to me? Or do I believe that God should be better to me, right? Do I believe that God is being unfair to me because I don't have her legs or, you know, her husband or her career or whatever the thing may be? And so I think as women in the church, as leaders in the church, like we have to get our own houses in order, if you will, right? Like that's always the responsibility of the leader. Put your oxygen mask on first, to be super cliche, right? But what do we really believe, right? Like searching our own hearts, what do we really believe? Do we believe that God has given us enough grace and that his grace is sufficient, right? As scripture says, you know, or are we kind of also playing that game of, yeah, his grace is good. I need Jesus plus this thing, or Jesus plus, you know, this title or whatever it may be. So in the church, yeah, I think as leaders, we need to do that first. And then I think reminding people of just how amazing God's grace is, not again to be like not cliche, not like amazing grace, we know the song, but really digging into all the different ways that God's grace does impact our lives. I think that there's a lot of Christians out there that just don't know that, that don't have a real sense of that, that aren't hearing that message, that really believe maybe that like, okay, I marked the Jesus box and now I get on with my self-improvement goals, and haven't heard, you know, how the gospel relates to daily life. I think that that's an important message we can keep sharing, and that ultimately should help us to stop comparing ourselves within the church walls.
I love that. And I just had the thought while you were talking, like, what a radical testimony to the Lord to have someone actually walking through churches who is leading a comparison-free life, and what an influence that would be on the church culture within your own, because we talk about this in a really like the church, all churches, but what we're really talking about is your church and your people and who you have influence over. And so, yeah, I mean, it is our responsibility to get our own house in order, but I think that in that sense, it's so impactful to others to see someone living that out, because we will look different. And that is one of the ways that we change the culture. And so I love that you're talking about this, and I love that you've put it in such great terms for us to digest and understand. So thank you for that.
Oh, thanks, Holly.
So as we wrap up, we like to ask this to all of our guests because we know that leaders are learners, and that is something that we like to cultivate here. So we would love to know what you're learning right now. Is there a book, a podcast, a resource that you're really gleaning a lot from? And would you be willing to share that with us?
Yes, I am geeking out over the book Quiet by Susan Cain. And it is not a Christian book, but I picked it up because my daughter is showing signs of being a quiet girl like her mother. And I had a Christian author friend say that it changed her life. And so I was like, oh, well, I'll check it out for my daughter. And y'all, it is not for my daughter. This book is for me. It is so interesting. So interesting how we've moved as a culture from a culture who values virtue to a culture who values extroversion. And it's fascinating. I mean, there's so much more than that. There's a whole chapter on how we as the evangelical church may be missing it. And again, this isn't a Christian book, but she looks at how extroverted evangelicalism is and how our churches may not be comfortable places for introverts. So anyway, I could talk about this book for the next half hour. That's where I'm at right now.
Oh, that sounds so good. We will make sure that that is in the show notes for our listeners, and I will definitely be checking that one out. As we close things out, Heather, I just want to thank you for your time. Thank you so much for everything you've shared. As Holly said, we're excited to share this with our audience. But just in case anybody wants to connect with you to learn more about what you're doing, your podcast, your ministry, whatever it is, if you could just share with us, how can we connect with you further after this conversation?
Absolutely. Well, I am Compared to Who on all the places. My show, my podcast is Compared to Who. I am comparedtowho.me online. And so my website is a great clearinghouse for all the places, my books, all the things. I also have a free download. It's a walk to lose the weight of comparison. It's kind of a guided walk. So exercise meets you're on a walk with your coach talking to you about where you're stuck in comparison. And that's free on my website at Compared to Me.
Amazing, Heather. Thank you again for being here today on the Christian Woman Leadership Podcast.
My pleasure.
Hi, friend. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Christian Woman Leadership Podcast. We're so glad you took the time out of your day to listen, and I truly hope that it made an impact on your ability to lead well. If it did, would you consider sharing this episode with a friend? You could take a screenshot of the episode and share it on your social media, maybe an Instagram story or on Facebook, or you could just text the link to a friend. We would truly appreciate that, as when you share with a friend, it helps spread the word about the podcast and it helps more women to be able to be impacted so that they can lead and love others well. Now, don't forget, your leadership matters, and it's time for you to embrace your gifts and lead with confidence.